to Phoenix Vision. I'm Jess Farmer, and my guest today is Mark Sabatsky, who is a professional coach to skiers and athletes. So this was a very deep and insightful podcast, all about the archetypal energies of the masculine and feminine, two forces that govern all of our life and existence. So we looked at how an imbalance between the two forces can cause health problems as well as performance issues with athletes, and then expanded on how they can cause issues within relationships and society at large. So great episode. We really went deep with this one. Thanks, Mark, and enjoy. Hello and welcome to Phoenix Vision. I am here with my good buddy Mark Sabatsky, who is a high-level Czech practitioner working with athletes to help them with their performance challenges and help them to excel within their careers. He works at Elite Center in Sweden and is also one of the, if not the top ski conditioning specialist in Europe. So it's a real honor to have you on, buddy, and it's been a while. So, like, really great to catch you. Thank you for going on, bud.
Absolutely, a pleasure to meet up with you and reconnect and see where our journeys have taken us since we were last in regular contact. So it's absolutely lovely.
Yeah, I loved our phone call last week, actually, because we're both kind of in a similar place of like feeling the flow of things, and we're talking just now about, you know. Yeah, things are going well, and like things are just happening, just of their own accord.
Exactly, I think that's a great sign when things are flowing like that. And it's okay; it takes energy to maintain that and get that to develop. But when it almost flows to you without you having to chase it, I think that's an amazing sign. Yeah. Amazing sign that you're living your authentic purpose. And the universe is giving the opportunities to express that. I think that's what I feel when I'm it just like you when we talk. It just flows to you, which is, I think, is a very good sign.
Mm. Yes, mate, I agree, and I think, like, yeah, it's the path of love from which our topic today kind of is the two divisions of love in. Many ways, maybe every way, which I'd love to open up. And we're going to talk about the two forces of masculine and feminine energies, the yang and the yin, which is, like most, if not all, of these concepts are incredibly simple yet deeply complex at the same time. Mm. With the two forces just being such a wealth of information, knowledge, coaching application, because, you know, these are like the two archetypal forces of the entire world, and the universe that we live in. But before we get into those, I'd love to ask you a question just about your journey, your background. What led you into, you know, coaching athletes at, like, you know, pretty much the highest level that you're working with?
I grew up in a very small island in the north of Scotland where there wasn't really many opportunities for athletic pursuits, certainly at that stage. But I always had, I guess, the athlete archetype within me. Athletic endeavors, sport was just something that I wanted to do from dawn till dusk and beyond. And that was something that I couldn't really fulfill as my childhood. And then as I left home and went out into education, I discovered that world more and got more into it. But I had, I guess, because I only really started playing serious sport, football in particular, in my 20s, I'd really missed the boat with the chances to go professional. But what I discovered was, although I had some level of talent, which probably gave me an opportunity, meant I played at a reasonable level, it was my body that was letting me down. So I would always have niggling injuries. My managers would always complain about me not being robust enough. And I was a goalkeeper as well. So it's a very sort of, you know, you need a stable, steadfast person in that scenario. You don't need somebody who's in and out, in and out, in and out. That doesn't really work for that for that position. So that was always a bit of a challenge for me. And it was basically towards the end of my career, I was screened, or I found the Czech system. I had a client who was a polo player who said, you must speak to this guy. He's a Czech practitioner. And from there, I just became absolutely laser focused upon the Czech courses. I just did the first prerequisite courses over and over and over again, because it was the information that I'd been desperate to find. And, you know, needless to say, the universe provided me with the opportunity, and it provided me the perfect platform. So then I went through the Czech system, and, you know, met educators like Warren Williams, Matthew Walden, Lee Brandon, and eventually I got a screening done on myself, and I realized, my goodness, there's so many things which are holding me back from what I was trying to achieve. There were so many physical things in the way, and also diet and lifestyle as well, don't get me wrong, but it was the physical imbalances that were my biggest challenge. And understanding the development in my body after doing those first six, I signed up to do 6 months of work with Lee, to do that first 6 months, and then the development in my body from that point onwards. You know, I'm now 42 and I'm far better physically than I was when I was in my 20s and 30s. And I see myself becoming physically better, which was a real, you know, we all have these preconceived ideas about what is possible regarding the physical body and what's the sort of standard slow or quick level of degradation and decline we see. So it's really interesting to find all of the stuff that I was taught by Paul Czech and by the other educators, the faculty members of Czech. It had so much truth and relevance and authenticity to it. And you didn't need to be some sort of monk or, you know, completely zealot person to achieve this. You can do this in a balanced and modern way in society. It doesn't have to be, you have to go and live off in the mountains somewhere or in the woods somewhere to achieve this. It's achievable and manageable even in our society. And then from there, basically, I find huge, I mean, you talked about love, and I think I find huge amounts of love in what I'm doing. I absolutely love helping my clients. When I see a young athlete who has a strong dream to achieve something, it really stimulates my desire to help. And I can really feel that universal force flowing through me. And that's, it's very meaningful, especially when I see so much potential and currently so many limitations when I'm working with athletes at elite clubs. And that gives me a huge amount of excitement, sometimes smattered with a bit of frustration, I'll have to be honest with you, because I see young athletes who are prepared to do everything and anything. And the information they're being given is actually slowing them down or decreasing their chances of success rather than increasing, as I see it. You know, some coaches go along the basis of it's the survival of the fittest, and you just push and push and push, and you break 90%, and the remaining 10% will you know, survive. But you know, I don't think that has to be the case.
Isn't there a saying that sometimes athletes don't do well because of their training, but in spite of their training?
That was a great Paul Czech saying. I remember that one from long ago. Yes, just succeeding despite your coaching, not because of it. And I'll be honest with you, I see that a lot. I see that a lot in technical coaching and the physical development. I see it over and over again. And I'm very lucky to work with a couple of incredibly good coaches, technical coaches in the football world. And then to go into elite environments and to see potentially the limitations of those environments is very interesting. And as I say, it's a mixture of exciting and frustrating, because I think of all those kids who put their trust in their coaches, their absolutely unwavering trust in these coaches. And, you know, if somebody puts their trust in you, in my opinion, there's a huge responsibility on oneself to do your best to deliver your side of the bargain. If somebody comes to me and puts in the effort and really, really focuses and really, really wants the dream they talk about, the dream that we discuss in their first meeting with me, then I see it as, you know, as a significant responsibility for me to know what I'm talking about. And if I don't know the answer, then I will refer to somebody who does. It's not about me, it's about the dream of that person. And that's I think takes it away from the sort of ego state where it's all about my process and this and my name and all that, and it's more about who is the best person to help this client. And maybe the way I speak or maybe the way I articulate things doesn't resonate with somebody. So, okay, it's better they work with somebody who does, but for help, I can help them find that person. Then that's just as good as me helping them, because that at the end of the day allows me to help more people in a roundabout way. So that's basically what takes me where I am today and gives me huge amounts of fire and energy. And I often think about, If the universe had a plan for me, it may have been for me to not fulfill my athletic potential, but to learn along the way what can be done to make that happen for people who do grow up in the right environment, who do have the potential to actually go for that and are prepared to put in the work. And it feels very relevant. It feels very, very true to me that statement. So that's sort of a brief as you can get from me description of of my journey. Brevity is not one of my strong suits, I'm afraid, but that's all right.
thank you very much. No, it's like when I look at you in terms of what you've done with the system and how you are and how I know you work, having done a program with yourself a few years ago, actually, you know, it's like really, when I saw you work a few years ago, it really inspired me to really excel and move into a different place within my own coaching, teaching. So, so fantastic.
Getting back in touch with you and seeing how our journeys are very, very symmetrical or very aligned, but they're down a slightly different path. I think that's a beautiful thing to see. You can help people in many, many different ways, and you can help yourself in many, many different ways. And finding the aspect that's most meaningful to you is so crucial. And It feels very much when I talk to you that I'm talking to somebody who has the same energy about what they're doing as I feel with what I'm doing, which is lovely to feel.
Well, I always feel so blessed and grateful for this path and to be, you know, doing something that I truly love. And I know the same is true for you. And, you know, I've got a lot of compassion for people who maybe aren't following their path and maybe aren't doing what they want to do. And part of what I do is actually to help people to find a new path. I've got a track record. I think I've got about 8 or 9 people to quit their jobs. Something a bit more fulfilling for them.
Perfect.
But, you know, I'm so, so grateful for this path and to be doing what we love, which is helping others fulfill their dreams and what they love.
Exactly.
So let's move into, thank you for that, brother. Thank you. So, love to move into our topic of today, which is the masculine and feminine dynamics, the masculine and feminine energies, yin and yang, which I was to preface that since we've been talking about love, and with love, being the spiritual concept that love creates everything. We live in a world of love. Everything around us is some manifestation of love, the universal one consciousness, God consciousness, Yushibu, whatever name from whatever culture is given to it, this interconnected nature of everything that is and everything that always was and always will be, which is interesting in itself, because, you know, they say that actually everything is actually happening all at once and time is just a human conception, but that's a segue we won't go on quite now. But
it's a big rabbit hole.
Sorry?
That's a big rabbit hole, that one.
So now, if everything was one, then it's a bit difficult for, you know, anything to happen if everything's always happening. So where the Buddhists look at the principle of yin and yang and actually dividing that oneness into the two polarities, the two energies of masculine and feminine to create this existence around us. So that's my little preface on it. So I'd love to hear what your thoughts would be as an explanation of these two forces that govern the universe that we live in.
Yeah, I often contemplate the best way to describe it. And I think it depends. It depends on the individual you're speaking to. But I think using the word polarity makes it a lot easier for people to understand. It's the polarity of a battery that gives it the work potential. So, and there's polarity in so many aspects. So I often use the natural world as an example of how to describe it. So thinking about something like the sun and the moon, the sun being the masculine, the fire, the moon being the cooler. Then you can go into things like the seasons, the winter being the feminine, the cooling phase, the nurturing where the roots of the trees are growing, and the summer being the yang, the masculine, the expression where the leaves are expressed. Even things like a seed. So the seed is the feminine, and then the sprout that comes from the seed is the masculine expression of the energy that's held within the feminine. And then from there, you can go into warm, cold. You can go into dry, moist. You can go into all different aspects. And it's the balance of those, or the culmination of those in the right proportions that creates the optimal environment for life to thrive. If it's too dry, if it's i.e. too yang, life does not thrive. If it's too cold, life does not necessarily thrive. And I think it's understanding where in our lives as individuals, and then in our societies, we talk, I'm sure we'll talk about this more as we go along, but where in the different aspects that we're focusing, these imbalances lie. I think that's a good way to describe it. I was doing a podcast with a good friend of mine here in Sweden, where we talked about this same subject, and people were fascinated by it. But they said, "But what is yin and yang? What is the masculine and the feminine?" It was like, "Yes, we didn't really we sort of forget that this is a very alien concept or a very foreign concept to so many people." And it was for me when I first started learning about it, you know, when I learned about it first time, I thought, well, that's sort of woo-woo hippie stuff. But the more you understand its sort of simplicity, the more beautiful it is, the more meaningful and beneficial it is to help people. And then describing it in different ways allows people to understand it in a more relevant way for them, because it can be a bit sort of ethereal otherwise. So I always find that turning it into a real world scenario makes it far more understandable. Let's think about the seasons, for instance. If you only ever had summer, everything would dry up, burn up, and nothing would grow. That's almost the expression of a desert. But if it goes the other way and it's always winter, it's always cold, it's permafrost, it's again a reduction in life, and it's the balance between those energies that gives the optimal expression of life. Even if we look at areas where, okay, there's maybe not a season, like a rainforest, you know, an equatorial rainforest. There may not be a season, but there's a polarity of warm and moist, which then allows life to thrive. So I think I love to use the sort of real world examples when describing the masculine and feminine.
Also, like, comes up as a potential example, like if we're driving a car and the car has stopped, you could describe this as total yin polarity.
Absolutely.
Car starts moving, we start driving away, and it starts moving from yin into its yang phase because there's activity happening.
And exactly,
car speeds up and up and up, it's going more into the yang until eventually it reaches its top speed, that extremity of the yang, and
yes,
then slow down and move back to the yin phase.
Exactly. And that could be expressed as a season, as a cycle of the sun or the moon around the planet. There's so many great examples to understand that balance is there. But if you drove your car full speed all the time, it would just wear out very, very quickly. You'd need to stop the car to fuel it up, to service it, to look after it. That would be, again, the yin phase, where you're nurturing, and then it allows for the expression. That's again where I love the natural world and its expressions of the yin and the yang. The winter is when the roots of the tree are growing. The summer is then the masculine expression of that connection to Mother Earth through the root ball. And that I think is a very simple way to look at it. But I think I honestly believe for most people that's all you need to know. Mm-hmm. Understanding that the full expression of life comes from that natural balance.
Mm. With balance being the key word when we're looking at the Tao.
Exactly.
Maintaining that balance, because balance is the fastest and best way to move forward. It's like the electromagnet when. Although kind of like railgun, when it's a balanced force, it creates that propulsion.
Yes.
I want to give like another example on it so that listeners get like a full scope on things. And I loved it. It really struck me when I heard that yin feminine energy builds energy, whereas yes, yang energy divides energy. So if we look at this in terms of like a woman who's grown in the period of gestation, growing the child, this is like the yin phase. So accumulating, building energy, putting yin, nurturing that child, and then the yang phase is when the birth happens. And then a different example, but really it's the same example because it's all the same dynamic, is that if we look financially, if we look at saving as a concept, saving money, this could be seen as the yin phase. So we're accumulating, we're building energy if we appreciate money as an energy. And then when we spend money, this goes into the yang phase. Now, but if we spend too much, we're going to end up in the overdraft. And if we're in the overdraft for too long, this is likely going to create some sort of pain.
Absolutely. And reduces the chance for a healthy, balanced scenario. This the same as if you go too far into the yin. If you all you do is save the money and never express the energy, which is all the money is energy. If you never actually express that, then that doesn't allow for growth and development and life to thrive. It just sits there in its gestational period. It's like imagine the child never being born and staying within the womb.
Or the car that never leaves the drive and just rots on.
Exactly, exactly. It's not. You cannot live your full expression in either full masculine or full feminine. So that's where finding that Tao path is. It doesn't mean that you can't deviate one side or the other, because on the yin yang symbol, you have a little bit of yin in the yang and a little bit of yin yang in the yin. So that's the pendulum that swings backwards and forwards. The the again, that's the seasons. You know, it's not wrong to be in winter. It's not wrong to be in summer. It's just a phase that you need to go through, and you probably need to go through the phases if you're talking about financial energy, the phase of saving, of accumulating in order to then express. I like that as an example as well.
Yeah,
they're everywhere. So yeah.
Living in this constant oscillation, you know, it's like night and day, being awake, sleeping, it's all this constant oscillation. But you know, us as health coaches, we see our clients who maybe aren't getting this oscillation between yin and yang on point, and maybe not getting this balance. And I think for the most part, I probably speak for both of us when we definitely with yourself working with athletes. People probably more in the masculine polarity, maybe too much, and then this is creating problems. We also see people in the yin, but tend to see people more in the yang. So I would love to pivot the conversation a little bit to how this relates to people, the body, and health. Mm-hmm. So as Czech practitioners, we have the immense privilege to see so many people from all ends of the spectrum. You know, we get to see people who are really struggling, maybe with adrenal burnout, health conditions, and really in a place of like low energy, stress, not having a good time in life, to the other end of the scale, looking at maybe at the athlete who's, you know, pursuing their dream with a lot of vigor.
Mm.
You know, both groups of people at both ends of the spectrum could potentially be suffering from the same challenges in terms of an imbalance between masculine and feminine energies. So, yeah, I'd love to ask you what your thoughts are and maybe an explanation of how the masculine and feminine energies are working within the body and how this relates to health within people who are struggling with their health, and then moving to the athletes, if that's right, please, bud.
Mm, of course. Again, you can go down so many routes with that one. So many examples. I'm trying to think of the most relevant one that's most understandable and easy to follow. But I think if you look into the oscillation and the rhythm of life, what we see so often, and we're all capable of doing this from time to time, is when we're not following the balance of the sun and the moon, when we lose that scenario. So we're going to bed too late. We're not going to bed as the sun sets. We're going to bed hours after the sun sets, and we're not following that diurnal rhythm of the sun. How that has a huge impact upon something like the hormonal system. The sun is absolutely fundamental to our own hormonal balance, and we see that when people are losing that alignment with nature, how it leads to all sorts of issues, such as adrenal burnout, as you talked about. But it could manifest as any number of things. So the different listen, I mean, but basically any dis-ease or injury or illness is some form of imbalance. Just about any is some form of imbalance within that yin yang. And there could be, if we look at something like blood pressure, a respiration rate which is too high causes our system to go into the sympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system, which is basically like, again, it's like the foot on the accelerator of the car. Everything runs at 100 miles an hour. It creates more pressure within the vascular system. That can lead to high blood pressure or many, you know, many other symptoms around the same aspect. You know, as you talked about adrenal burnout, that's just some form of hormonal imbalance caused by an imbalance somewhere else, and then we focus on the symptoms, we treat those symptoms, and but it's not, and people go from practitioner to practitioner to doctor to doctor, searching for the way to medicate that, but never actually get to the root cause of it, which could be becoming more very simple, returning to the rhythms of nature. And I think that's very relevant to so many scenarios that I see. There, it's almost a complete disassociation or lack of understanding of natural balance. And that's where you get the balance of the yin and the yang. As I said, yes, it can oscillate between the two. You can go into a yin phase where if you're talking about the bank account balance, where you're expending more energy to create something absolutely vital. But as I say, if you always stay in that scenario, that leads to burn out from a financial perspective. So it's without having a specific case in front of me, I find it a little bit tricky to describe it in a relevant way that people would understand. Or I find it a little bit tricky thing to describe, because it's so multifaceted. It's so intrinsic to everything. I think that's part of, it's just nature. It's just life. And I think that's part of the, if we look at the steps in which to rebalance that, that's a fundamental aspect.
It's interesting, because the body is actually very good at balancing itself, and it's always trying to find that balance, trying to find that homeostasis.
Yep.
And, you know, if we can create the right conditions in the body through looking after, you know, six foundation principles, hydration, nutrition, sleep, movement, thinking and breathing, yep, things will self-regulate and balance that. And often health conditions will clear up in of themselves. But, you know, it's our human mind that drives our behaviors and our thought patterns, mm-hmm, and the conditioning that brings us so far out of balance. And it's really interesting, because, you know, you don't really, okay, animals do get sick, but, you know, if you look at, you know, wild animals and compare them to humans in terms of like them getting sick and, or them being able to maintain balance, it's a completely different story, you know? And you may find this in your coaching practice as well, whereby someone knows that what they're doing is bringing them out of balance. They know that what they're doing is causing harm. They know that what they're doing is, you know, contributing to their health challenge or pain challenge or whatever challenge it may be. Mm-hmm. And it's a real struggle for them to stop doing it or change the behavior. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which in of itself could be seen as also an imbalance of the masculine and feminine energies, because, like, so something that Warren shared with us years ago on the courses. I think we might have been on the same course, and he kind of said, it sounds bad, but every single problem is in two forces.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's true. How can it not be? And I find so often that when we do address these archetypal imbalances between the two forces and help the person establish the balance between their thoughts and therefore their emotions, well, their emotions and thoughts come together, but then balance their behaviors and have that awareness shift, suddenly magic can happen. We get out of the way of those things that are causing us to be out of balance. And, you know, you must have seen many times like a miraculous transformation in someone within 2 or 3 weeks when they, if they're able to make change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. On all different levels, everything from chronic disease to acute or chronic pain syndrome, athletic performance decline or some major health issue. There are so many examples that we've all, you know, if you've been working in this long enough and have come in contact, that you're able to see these and help these kind of scenarios, which basically have gone unchanged for years, no matter what the what the palliative approaches have been to treat the symptom. It's only when you start to create that balance that you get the results, and that's so profound in many, many different ways. And it still surprises me to this day how it has, when you're using the holistic process as we do, the fantastic results that can be achieved with these relatively, on the face of it, simple processes that redress the imbalances. Finally, discovering where using our assessment tools, whether they be physical or diet and lifestyle, mental, emotional, to find out where the imbalances are. And then you can redress those imbalances, which then brings the person back into a homeostatic place where health thrives, rather than the body trying to compensate for a multitude of imbalances, which is obviously very stressful and leads to the body burning out.
Yeah. I've got a lot of compassion as well, because, you know, people aren't really helped. And I think a lot of that comes back to the education system. You know, we're talking a little bit about before the call, how many times we get clients, once we're taking them through foundational things, and it's just like, oh my God, this is like obvious. So why don't they teach us in schools? So I've got a lot of compassion, because I think, you know, with more education, I think things could look really different. I'd love to ask you about the athletes, because in our call the other day, you're sharing about some of the challenges the athletes go through with the balance with the energies. I know, like, athletes, you know, high performance, like, no pain, no gain, less train until, you know, like, more training is better, right?
Because more is always
training will make me faster or stronger or whatever. Yeah.
It's a constant reoccurring subject that I deal with every athlete. Basically, every athlete that I work with, I'm trying to think of any that don't have that when they come through the clinic door, are in a state of excess masculine energy. They're eating sugary foods. They're eating foods that burn too quickly, that are not energy dense enough. So they're almost like pouring petrol on a fire. So they just go into this hyper accelerated state. Then their training processes are excessive. Their coaches don't understand periodization. They don't understand work-rest relationships, ratios. They don't understand the very fundamentals of how to create balance within the body. And I think it comes back to actually a lot of people forgetting what the home of performance is. The home of performance comes from a body that's in balance. Paul Check, another one of his great sayings was, it's better to have an undertrained athlete than an overtrained athlete, because at least an undertrained athlete will have some energy in the tank. That was always one of the sayings that I use with my young, especially my young athletes who are A, being pushed too hard, and B, not understanding that principle of, it, you don't get better results always by doing more. Mm. You get better results by balancing it out. And I see some athletes who are in an incredibly unbalanced state, which is inhibiting their performance significantly in their growth from different levels all the way down to some of the fundamental, you know, physiological developments. It's tough to see, but it's a constant theme. It's a constant theme. I think it also comes back to the basis of our society and our belief systems about our worth. We have to be doing to be valuable. We have to be pushing. We have to be the word grinding, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, okay. But do we, when we're talking about grind, do we actually understand that the body's not getting stronger when it's training? It's only getting stronger when it's resting after effective training and with a good balance of six foundation principle health aspects. These are the things that people forget. And I see elite sports associations and sports clubs making this mistake over and over and over and over again and missing fundamental, simple things which, when addressed, create huge benefit when it's allowed to be expressed. But the challenges, I would say the biggest challenge I face when working with athletes is almost having to work not against their coaches, but in contradiction with their coaches. And I see it over and over again, youth athletes coming into me, and I can only afford to give them a strength and conditioning program that includes a couple of exercises other than stretching, mobilizing, and energizing, because they're already so overpushed with ineffective and excessive training protocols that actually leaves them burnt out.
Right.
And it makes my job interesting, but much more challenging, because I have to almost go back the other way. And I can't give as much of what I know would be useful, because I know that if I add too much more excess energy out, that will not help the athlete.
Yeah, I can imagine that to be really frustrating, because I'm sure you've probably been in situations maybe where you've written a program, person started doing the program, maybe shares what they're doing with the coach, and then the coach maybe goes, oh, what are you doing? You know, you're not training enough, or, you know, something like that. Does that situation come up quite frequently?
Sure. But I think also it can come from even higher up within that sporting environment, where if the board members or the sponsors are not seeing blood, sweat, and tears being poured out on the training pitches and in the gym, then they think that it's not actually creating what they want. But I would say the main thing that I see is it's almost like a lack of understanding and knowledge when it comes to the balance. Anybody could push somebody to their physical limit. You need no education to do that. You need no understanding to do that. You just need some heavy weights and enough time, and you know, you can push somebody to that level. But I think that was one of the amazing things that the Czech system did for me, was to open up that understanding of creating that balance. Again, the yin and the yang, the balance of the yin and the yang. Even in terms of muscle length tension, if you have one muscle on one side of the joint that's too long and one muscle on the other side of the joint that's too short, that's going to create torsion, shear force, and torque in the joint. And that wears the joints out quicker. You know, these are marvelous manifestations of that imbalance. And as I say, I could go on and on and on about different examples. It's just, but when you said almost like it's every symptom is being caused by an imbalance here somewhere, I thought, yes, that's absolutely right. All of the athletes who I'm working with who are having these issues when they come to see me, or they maybe even don't realize it. But when we go into their performance training, we find there are these imbalances. And by reducing and removing those imbalances, it allows them to perform so much better without the need for pushing. So just creating the balance before, the foundational balance before you add in the highly intense exercise protocols, which are necessary, because you do need to do that. But it has to be on the basis that you've created that balanced foundation before you do that. And that's where so many strength and conditioning coaches would benefit from focusing more, would be on the earlier phase foundational stability. I find this all the time, that these, you know, you get these athletes and they're doing plyometric this, maximal strength that, explosive the next. And this athlete cannot actually stabilize their foot, ankle, knee, hip, pelvis, back, neck, shoulder. And then they're throwing around heavy weights, moving in at high speeds, huge degrees of angle per second in the joints, and then wondering why the performance levels don't go up and the injury rate does as well. Sorry, the performance doesn't go up and the injury rate does. That to me, and I say the most exciting is when you work with an athlete who is undergoing regular strength and power testing, and you get them to just do their individualized flexibility and stability work, and they beat their own personal records that they've plateaued at for a long time. That's always that's one of my favorite ones, because it gives such an amazing awareness to the individual, and it's such an objective scenario that it makes things very, very obvious. But then again, the more subjective, where people start to feel more energy and they know they're performing better, that also can be just as powerful. So it's lovely to see it from both aspects. When you say players, I had a youth player say to me recently, football feels easy now. I've been working on my body. My body feels stable. My body's stable and balanced now. Football is easy. And it's like, good. That's exactly how it should be. Because your body is supportive, like what I said about my journey, my body was not supportive of what my dreams and goals were. So I was having to actually work against my body. Imagine how much extra energy that uses.
Yeah.
You know? So it's working with athletes is a fascinating, almost, I would say, microcosm of our society in general. I mean, I think it comes back again. I think I mentioned before, it comes back to our general principles and fundamentals of what is success, what is the right way to do things. You know, we have a scenario in our sports teams where so many, I see this over and over and over again, and I'm talking elite athletes on high salaries in big clubs trying to achieve big things, international athletes. And it doesn't get less when you get to the top level, which in some ways is highly exciting for me, because I think, as again, another great Paul Cech saying, the road to the top is wide open. But at the same time, if you're conflicting with a process that's been in place for so long, then do expect to be questioned and potentially not in a polite way. But I'm also finding that coaches and physiotherapists, I had a lovely, lovely conversation with a physiotherapist of a player the other day. He wanted, you know, his agent had sent him to me, because that was their process. They realized that by nourishing the player and nurturing the player, they become a better commodity. You know, not just on that sort of basis, but they genuinely care about their athletes. It's a very good association. I love working with them. And the physiotherapist wanted to speak to me after he'd seen the player's program, and he was open-minded and basically asked why I had given those stretches, exercises, etc. And because I had, you know, I had a whole battery of tests that I'd used, I had a reason for everything. So it wasn't like I like this exercise or I like that stretch or I like stretching or I hate maximal strength or whatever it was. It's like, this is the individualized, specified aspect that's going to be most beneficial for this player. And he felt it straight away. The player felt it straight away, communicated that with his physiotherapist. And the physiotherapist was interested. So we had a lovely conversation, and he talked about wanting to send some of his players who he has difficult time helping. And that's like, that's what I want. I want to work in this kind of collaborative state. I don't want it to be a case of me against the world. I want it to be a case of, okay, this might be something worth looking at. And I love that. But I see it happening. So there is an openness to it. So.
Yeah. I think definitely the collaborative effort of multiple different therapists is the way forward. And
yeah, you
know, cause I think, sometimes therapists, it can be a bit frictional and a bit, you know, funny if more than one person's working on them, but with their patient. But I'm of the opinion, you know, I know some things, I don't know other things. Hey, like, there's this other person over here who can like really, really help and really benefit here, and how there's this person over here, and then the person's getting a much more well-rounded 360-degree approach.
Exactly.
And just working in one way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to shift gears a little bit and open up the conversation to masculine and feminine dynamics within relationship, particularly between like men and women or other relationships, because I see that this causes a lot of challenges with clients in terms of the relationship dynamics and the kind of roles between the masculine and feminine energies. And you know, I think it's a good time to maybe say that when we talk about masculine and feminine, we're not talking about men and women.
No.
Necessarily. We're talking about the energies that we all contain. Men have a feminine side that, unfortunately, with many men, is actually repressed and pushed down, which maybe we can talk about. And women have a masculine energy. And we all have these inner energies. Now, but my understanding of it, the general principle is that, or one way of looking at the principle is that the masculine is... The masculine's role is to create the containment for the feminine energy to feel safe so that it can be creative and flow. Now, within the self, if considering we have these two energies, if the masculine energy isn't stable, then the person will struggle to be creative because likely they'll be being stressed due to this instability within the mind and emotional system that's generated through that imbalance between the two energies.
Yeah.
Look at within relationship, if the man is in like a masculine role and a woman is more in the feminine role within the relationship dynamics, and the man maybe isn't exhibiting the stable masculine energy within that container, and that could be through not looking after things, maybe not being financially secure, maybe not sticking to principle, this kind of thing, then the woman is maybe then sent more into the masculine energy because needs to kind of like pick up the slack of what's not happening from the man in that role. And
yeah, the masculine energy is not balanced.
Hmm.
And it requires almost an extra effort to create that masculine balance.
Hmm.
I think it's a complex subject. And I think again, stating the fact that it's not just, this is the masculine role, this is the feminine role, and that's it. There are many relationships that work very well where maybe the female member of the couple is exhibiting the more masculine side, and it works very well because the male member of that relationship is happier in the feminine. It doesn't have to be that classic old fashioned way around. It can be the other way around. I think that's a great awareness for people to have, is it doesn't just because it's, you know, the old fashioned state of, okay, this is the male role, this is the female role. It doesn't have to be that way. You get men who are more feminine. You get females who are more masculine. And that's okay, as long as there's balance with that within that relationship. But I think what you said about if the partner exhibiting the masculine side is not balanced in that energy, it forces the other partner to try and find a balance by maybe being more masculine than would actually benefit them.
Mm.
They're not actually living their own archetypal energy system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where we get as a society, we have to be understanding about how our belief systems are affecting that. I think it's I had a client many years ago. She was the granddaughter of a suffragette, and she had been given a set of beliefs about what it was to be a woman, what it was to be a modern woman who has the right to do whatever they want. This had obviously been fought for very hard by her grandmother's generation and by her grandmother's peers. But the problem was that the pressure, the inauthentic pressure that was placed upon my client in her younger years was so excessively imbalanced to her innate state that it actually completely burned her out. And she had basically a breakdown. I believe she was at Oxford University, and she'd been told, because, you know, the suffragettes fought so that you could go to Oxford University, you need to study so hard that you can get the best qualifications, the best degree, the best job, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that wasn't right for my client. That completely conflicted with her internal state. And she pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed until she basically broke down. And she never actually recovered from that.
Really?
Yeah, she had basically gone so far into the yang that it had actually damaged her capacity to express the yang thereafter. Yeah. And it manifested in many ways. She found it very difficult to do any exercise with any resistance as part of her rehabilitation process that we were doing. The idea of her moving any weight, it's almost like it brought a flashback of that excessive masculine scenario that she'd lived in her developmental years. And it was almost repulsive to her to think about moving a heavy weight, because that brought back that again was another expression of the masculine side. So I think that's where we've got to be very careful as a society, that if we're forcing people to believe that this is what is right to be a man or right to be a woman must do this, a man must do that, it doesn't allow for the natural state, the innate natural state of the individual. And that's where you get the conflict within. And that's what creates the imbalance within. And that's where you get the pain, the dysfunction, the dis-ease, and the, you know, endless numbers of symptoms that come up. So I think that's very important to understand, that we, as a society, we can have whatever belief system we'd like, and we can push whatever agenda we like, but we as the individual have to connect to what's right for us. It doesn't mean that being more masculine is wrong, or being more feminine is wrong, you know. I almost get the suspicion that we're actually in a state where being either masculine or feminine is not really acceptable anymore. Mm. It's almost like we're not even allowed to express those from either perspective. Mm. And again, if you're getting rid of the polarity, you lose the work potential.
Yeah.
Forced to almost be sort of an androgynous mishmash, rather than being able to authentically and happily express what it is to be masculine energy or feminine energy, and to be able to do that in an environment where it's accepted, and when it's accepted.
Yeah, I just want to jump in there, because it's not so much like talking about like the man does this and the woman is in this role. It's more like the polarity. What happens when the polarity gets confused? Because I've got a number of friends where the man is more in the feminine role, the woman is more in the masculine role, and hey, it's absolutely fantastic. And I think because like the polarity is there. It's kind of like, yep. I think when maybe like both partners are maybe more in the feminine, or both partners are more in the masculine, you kind of get into this what you describe as androgynous mixed kind of way, or that there's no polarity because both are so in the middle, which is what I think we are seeing more and more of within society, which is really interesting. I think what's happening at the moment, you know. If you look on TV and just spend the night watching, you know, some of the things that might be on a Saturday night, you'll kind of see that some interesting things are happening within the messaging that's being put out there. And I think there is, I think by design, there is this purposeful confusion of the energies of masculine and feminine within society. Mm. Because I think, like you say, the polarity creates action potential and movement. Now, if there's less polarity due to the polarities maybe being confused, then there's less movement within people and more challenges. And, you know, we're kind of getting into quite a controversial area, but I think it's like really important to talk about it, because it is, I see this kind of confusion creating like a lot of issues. And yeah, it is, I think we're in an interesting place at the moment. And, you know, there's so many facets to this. Like, I think men aren't, are confused about what masculinity is, for instance, and
balanced masculinity.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got it ranging from gangs on the street who think it's like a masculine thing to attack someone through as like a rite of passage. And then in other areas, you've got men who are deeply in the feminine because there's been so much lambasting of masculinity, you know, kind of tarring all masculinity with the same brush of toxicity, which is, you know, and so I think like men are like generally so confused at the moment as to what it is to be a man. And that creates so much uncertainty within themselves, which then potentially then massively affects the relationships that they have with other men and especially women as well, because if the polarity is confused here, then it's going to create confusion over here. So, what would you
think? And of course, obviously with themselves as well, the relationship with themselves as almost the foundation of all those other aspects. It's, but I think you can go the other way and you can look at almost... It feels to me that it's almost slightly unacceptable to be truly in your feminine as well. For women, like I mentioned with my client, for my client to express a less masculine energy was not acceptable because of the environment that she grew up in. And that was her familial state, but it can be the societal state as well. So if a woman is only valuable if she has X career, has the X salary, has this, that, and the next thing, then that gives the opportunity for somebody to be living out a life that's not actually aligned with your own balance of the masculine feminine. Mm. And again, it doesn't matter whether it's male or female, or a male or a female, but It's a confusing time for a lot of people. A lot of people, I feel, are very confused about what is right. We don't seem to have wise people informing us. It seems to almost be something that's actually, I'm getting a bit sort of controversial here, but it almost seems like it's set up to try and disempower.
Mm-hmm.
In a certain way, and it doesn't. It, you know, just having an amazing high wage packet or a career that does X, Y, Z, that's not necessarily empowering. Mm. And I think it's why I was listening to Jordan Peterson talking about the number of females that highly intelligent, highly effective females who leave the standard. Standard sort of high achieving workplace when they get to their 30s and they've actually realized they've been living a life that was not actually designed for them. Mm. It was designed for them to accumulate more energy in order to keep them away from their own intuitive wisdom and their own sense of self. Again, going back to my client, that's where she was. And she was pushed so hard that she broke in her early 20s and never fully recovered. She'd been having therapy for years to try and get over the challenges that she'd faced. And I think you see this, okay, less significant levels, but very much you see you see people, and they're, and you know, we're going back to the fundamentals of the yin and the yang. You see people that are in this constant state of fatigue, adrenal fatigue, hormonal imbalances, menstrual cycle messed up, or reduction in sex hormones. You know, we see these things all over the place. The reduction in fertility. Well, that's a symptom that's multifaceted in its origin. Obviously, toxicity, lifestyle, again, the holistic system, there's so many factors inputting upon that individual, but it's potentially driving people into a state where they cannot thrive. And again, going back to athletes, it's very obvious to me when I start working with people and I see their schedules and I see what they're being pushed to do and how they believe what they believe they need to do in order to be successful. And again, that goes back to the societal value and belief systems, which is, it has benefits, but it potentially has some ways to optimize it as well.
Well, I think this, by the way, sharing about the client and the generational legacy is like really, really interesting. And
yeah,
it brings up, when we're talking about society and this issue, it brings up, you know, the feelings that we've been in this patriarchal society for so long, which is naturally going to put things more into the masculine principle, but like in an unhealthy way, which change is happening. I'm like really thankful to say there's so much work to be done. What's really coming up is this translation of how the society and all of the programming and everything that happens within society is affecting the person at the individual level, and then how that's being represented through their body. So, because we know that the body and mind are the same thing, the body is an imprint of the psyche.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Big question, but how do you feel the patriarchal influence of the society has and does influence the health of the nation and the people that we may see as clients? And how much of the people we may see as clients do you feel is being influenced by that patriarchal way of society being?
Well, I mean, I feel compelled to basically mention feminism. Would there be the necessity for the suffragette movement if the excessive masculinization of the patriarchal setup had not been in place? Again, it's like we talked about an individual relationship. There may not be the need for that almost excessive expression if in the beginning something was more balanced. It's almost like the pendulum swung too far towards the masculine, and then it swung back again to an unhealthy level towards the feminine expression of masculinity, almost, or the female expression of masculinity. And I think that's very fundamental to what I see. I think, look, you can go into all deep levels of what is driving our psyche. And, you know, levels of lack, which means you must earn more. You know, I'm only valuable if I earn X, Y, Z, if my house is this size, if I've got that many cars, et cetera, et cetera. That then basically is overstimulating to the masculine value system. It doesn't give value to the fact that if I'm resting or reading, accumulating information, as we talked about the feminine being an expression of, it doesn't give value to that. It's all about what you can achieve. And until you're achieving something, whether you're male or female, something material, then you're not actually a valuable member of your society. Just by being, you're not valuable. You have to go beyond just being to be valuable. I'm not for one instance proposing that everybody give up their job and just sit around all day. That's not what I'm saying at all. But if we're in a state which is pushing us so hard to achieve something that potentially allows us to be taxed more, potentially allows us to spend more on stuff we don't need, rather than focus our energy on things that are actually meaningful and purposeful to us. You know, for instance, with me, if I love what I do, I don't do it because of the money. I do it because of the joy I get for doing it. In actual fact, the financial part is a distraction that I'd, you know, in some ways I'd rather not have to think about. In some ways I'd rather just go about my day helping people, without that need to do that side. But obviously, you know, there are, I'm very mindful of the amount of pressure that's put on people, the amount of bills, the amount of taxation, the amount of energy that's needed to exist, to be able to buy your organic food, to be able to rest effectively, to be able to live in a healthy environment. So I think it comes, it's such a deep question. You can go so many different ways with it. But I think if you go into that excessive masculine society, then you have the opportunity to become more enslaved. Because it's all about what you can achieve, what you can earn, what you can create, rather than being in that nurturing state. I think that's I think one of our sort of original wounds from our society, and that I think is creating quite a lot of imbalance. And I think it also, I know when I speak to people about this, I often find they react quite strongly, because it's almost like this is so fundamental. It's almost got to a religious level where you're almost questioning the nature of God by questioning this, by saying, okay, is the setup of our institutions actually the best way? Often if you express that, people go react quite violently. And why would you react to that question violently if it was an open and honest conversation, or if you actually deep down believe that really that's not how it should be? You know, you're triggering somebody because they've actually said something relevant. If you don't say something relevant, it doesn't hurt somebody. Or doesn't trigger them, or doesn't create an emotional response.
So yeah, it's very interesting, very interesting. I think people struggle to envision a different kind of reality because we've been in a certain reality for so long, you know, thousands of years. It's very difficult to see a way out of that. And maybe that trigger, that reaction, maybe that also comes from the potential powerlessness the person may feel to be able to take agency within their life to make change. And feeling powerless in a system that, you know, is, in my opinion, constructed against our empowerment, you know. I think it could be an interesting path becoming like a health practitioner and other areas similar to this, because we need to be quite careful, I think, because it can be quite easy to become nihilistic when you when you start seeing, you know, like the stuff of, you know, what is happening, when you understand health and when you start like looking at the systems that are in place and looking how detrimental the systems that are in place, but not just detrimental, harmful. You know, I was at a great festival on the weekend. It was Russell Brand's community festival. On the Saturday night, he's an absolute comic genius. But he's full-blown an activist now. I highly recommend, you know, watching his stuff. And he had up on stage, they did a talk show with, first there was Charlotte Church, who's doing some exciting work with reforming the education system. So this is a person who is basically looking at all of the, how the current education system isn't really serving children and the next generation. And she's actually developing a new education system, which is very, very exciting. So I highly recommend people to check that out. It's very, very much down so it's quite similar to a Steiner approach. Then on the same stage, he had a whistleblower from the FDA talking about all of the bad things that happen in the food industry, such as like Coca-Cola lobbying the American Diabetes Foundation and paying them money to, you know, come up with reports that are in favor of people drinking Coca-Cola. And that's one story of many. And then they had the whistleblower from Cambridge Analytica come on board, who, you know, has found that Brexit and the Trump campaign were rigged by social media manipulation. So had all three of these people on stage at the same time talking to them about these different themes. And it's just like, when you start to go into a study of health and start to, you know, walk the quote unquote conspiracy theorist path, you start to see, you know, it can be really, you know, easy to get, like I say, get into that nihilistic place. And sort of when you see to the extent of which, you know, the world is suffering by what looks like design, and whether that design is coming from just a pure place of greed, maybe, yeah, you could believe that, you know, being driven just from profit, not caring about people's health, to as long as the bottom line is taken care of, or is there something maybe deeper to it, you know? And then when you start looking at these dynamics of masculine and feminine and what looks to be, or what could look to be, like the intentional muddying of the water between the polarities,
yeah,
by society, then, you know, it brings up some tricky questions. And, you know, and unfortunately, the end of the line is unfortunately the person who is in our treatment room or the doctor's office or, you know, wherever, who's sick because of it.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it's, I think that's a rabbit hole that you could spend a lot of time going down. And it's, you know, it's an area that I try not to focus too much on, because it can become quite overwhelming. And I think, but I you know, for sure, there's far more awareness of it now. There's far more, you know, you look at somebody like a Joe Rogan podcast, and, you know, the amount of exposure that the amount of interest that he generates, or somebody like Tucker Carlson in America as well, the amount of interest that he's receiving, sending out the same sort of message. It does feel that there is more and more consciousness coming to this. And it's almost like those systems that are in place are having to push harder and harder and harder, which again is creating more polarity on the other side and potentially giving more energy to potential change. People are becoming uncomfortable with that scenario more and more, and that discomfort is giving work potential. If you're uncomfortable enough, you'll move. If you're too comfortable, you'll stay in the same place. So maybe it has to get to that level where it becomes so freaking obvious that it forces enough people to become conscious. And then there's a chance for evolution.
Absolutely. You know, and, you know, it brings up I think this is Paul saying that pain quickens consciousness. You know, we've been undergoing a lot of pain in the last few years. And, you know, this is, you know, I think a tightening of the grip of certain powers that are actually losing power through people gaining more consciousness and becoming more aware of themselves. And actually, ironically, if there is any sort of design to kind of maintain or this grip on power, through tightening that grip, it's caused so much pain that people are changing and becoming more aware of themselves and, you know, making different choices and, you know, going into crisis points. There's been so many crisis stories over the last few years, so many. I think everyone went through some sort of crisis pretty much.
Yeah.
through that crisis, you know, we grow and evolve, because it's like a developmental collision. You know, we go through that pain and then learn from it. And if we don't learn from it, then we will be given another opportunity to learn from it later. But, you know, it might not
be. And it'll be a bit more severe until we do listen. But that's you know, if I look at that kind of process, that then it seems like the pain is becoming louder and louder, or more significant, and it's creating more consciousness or awareness. Let's put it that way. That's what I see. I mean, that might be the circles that I operate in. Maybe, you know, there are other people who don't see that at all. Of course there are. Completely would disagree with us. But you know, when you see something like the US medical industry or health industry is five times larger than the entire military budget. You know, the biggest military in the world, the US health budget is five times the size of that. Then you realize how much energy there is behind a standard process. But that takes a huge amount of energy to keep it going. And if you get enough people who start to question it, and you know, that's one of the great things about social media and the internet and ability to connect with people. You know, people, you know, Joe Rogan sitting in a booth, a recording booth in his house, can reach 50 million people within no time at all. I mean, that gives the chance of change a much bigger opportunity, a much faster opportunity. It creates more momentum.
Yeah, I agree. I think it can be easy to get into this place of kind of like looking at what's happening and like getting low on it. But at the same time, as you say, there are so many good things happening at the moment. Like, really? So many amazing initiatives. So many, you know, because things are going polarized in one way, so the polarity goes the other way, and people are speaking out. People are doing research with things. People are, I think, within the business world, moving into a much more heart-centered direction, because, you know, the systems of capitalism and, you know, profit, greed, I don't give a shit about my impact on the environment or other people as long as my bottom line is looked after. I think this way of thinking is dying, thankfully. Yeah. And like, if we were to look at like the chakra, in terms of chakra connotations, I think we've been in this third chakra power-based place within the business world, maybe with, like, you know, the mid-1980s being like the peak of that, in general. And, you know, what I'm seeing is the emergence of so many heart-centered businesses with so many good ethics in the right place that are there to serve the planet, rather than themselves. And I think this is where the tide is turning, and it's really exciting to be seeing this. Like, we're seeing so much change within our lifetime. It's like a really exciting time to be alive right now, you know?
It is. It seems to be really accelerating as there becomes more energy behind it all. I think that goes back to the polarity. It's becoming so obvious that it's generating more energy behind it. And that allows for more change. Mm-hmm. And then if you connect that with people becoming more aware, then that's a good combination. You know, obviously there can be potential misperceptions and people focusing in areas that, you know, might not be the optimal. But as you say, if it's heart-centered, that's a great start.
Oh, brother, thank you so much. We'll come to last question or last couple of questions. And you know, what we're doing to the planet at the moment. I think it ties in with everything we've been saying. I mean, with in terms of the patriarchal structure, and I think, you know, Mother Nature is suffering at the moment, and due to the polarity that's been put upon her for so long, and you know, this could be archetypally representative of the whole suffering of the feminine. There's a Mayan prophecy that for thousands of years the humanity has been a bird flying with one wing furled and the other wing open, and that's been the wing of the masculine. It's, as a result, flying in circles. So the Mayan prophecy says that this is the time of the unfolding of the second wing. So long, in thousands of years, humanity is now going to fly straight. This is, they say, the age that we're in.
Yes, okay.
My penultimate question is, what do you feel that we can do on the individual level to help affect this change within ourselves and our society? Because it can get a bit daunting, you know, when you're talking about like kind of like big societal concepts, people can feel quite disempowered in terms of like, what can I really do? I'm just one person kind of thing. But you know, what would your opinion? How can someone maybe, if they're, maybe got to this point in the podcast, they're maybe inspired and they want to think about like, what can I do? What can I do?
I think it comes back to another Paul Check saying, which is the I, we all. We have to focus upon ourselves first before we can affect change. If I get up in the morning and I haven't slept properly, then I can't go and help very many people because I just don't have the energy behind that goal. So if we learn to nourish and care for ourselves, that's a great first step, because then A, we have more energy to do stuff, and then B, if we're living a living embodiment of what it is to be healthy, happy, and whole, people feel that vibrational state, they feel that energy, people are attracted to it, and that will affect change in its own way. There's And you meet people like this. They have this almost this magnetic high frequency energy, which is appealing. People want to vibrate at the same frequency. And I think that allows the individual, if you want to affect change, then affect yourself. Live the change that you want to see. And when you do that, people will see you become healthier. And they'll go, oh, okay, well, you know, so you know, people do notice. People are always, you know, noticing each other, seeing each other in a certain way. So just by focusing on your own health, vitality, and well-being, and really connecting with what that is to you, really connecting what it is that's meaningful to you. And you've talked about helping people do this in a bigger way, and that's very important, very important. But do we have the energy to create change if we're so fatigued that it's just about possible for us to get up in the morning and get to work? If we're in that state, there's no way we have the energy to create anything else other than just maintain the status quo, that maintain that low level of capacity. And that's one of the things I remind myself of about why to look after myself better. And it's, you know, again, there are aspects of pendulum swing, of oscillation from masculine to feminine. And, you know, from my own personal state, I'm in a very creative state. I'm in quite a masculine state, and I do feel it within my body from time to time. And I do need to just check in with my body and say, okay, hang on a second, this is a message, this symptom or this feeling or this emotion is a sign of my pendulum has swung too far one way or the other. And doing that, checking in with your own body, with your own feelings, with your own emotions, with your own symptoms, and saying, okay, this is a purposeful message, which is allowing me to have a greater understanding of myself, then we can use the body and the psyche as almost like a barometer or a biofeedback mechanism to understand where there may be imbalances and where we can start to focus on. And if we are suffering with pain, if we are suffering with digestive issues, with bad sleep quality, with, you know, we can't operate without our drinking coffee all day, those are all signals that from our body saying, okay, something's not quite right here, or it could get to the level of a dis-ease. That's the body saying to ourselves, or if we're having repetitive thoughts or emotions that are not driving us towards the life that we wish, all those are signals which are telling us we're not quite in balance. And then we can look at something as simple as the six foundation principles to understand where it is within our life that we don't have the balance, and where we can focus on that gives us the biggest bang for our energetic buck. And then once we do that, we create more work capacity. And in that way, we can affect more change. So there's no way we can affect change if we're stuck eating horrible food, going to bed following the rhythm of the sun, and separating ourselves from nature. You know, we are nature. You know, there are 70 trillion human cells in my body, maybe a bit more because I'm so big, but there are at least 1.4 quadrillion bacteria, protozoa, parasites within my body. So I'm less human than I am nature. I'm less human than I am non-human. And all, you know, we now find that the bacteria is a massive impactor upon every aspect of health. It's now the more and more we study the microbiome, the more we understand that it's the home of, or dysfunction within that system is the home of, is the basis of so many issues, physical, mental, emotional, et cetera, et cetera. And so again, I've slightly rambled there a bit, but going back to your question, I think if we're getting back to nature, getting more in tune with the fact and understanding the fact that we are nature, we are a product of Mother Nature. We have grown and developed within Mother Nature, and we are a beautiful expression of it. Then we can understand that by returning to that state, living more naturally, that will allow us to function more as we're designed. And any system that you try to get it to do something it's not designed for will struggle. So the more we return to that sort of natural way that our bodies are meant to function, the more our energy levels will grow, and the more in alignment, and the more intuitive we'll be, and that will allow us to do more. So I would suggest that's quite a long answer, but I would suggest it's a big question. It's a big question, and I think, but it's fairly simple. It's fairly simple. You know, it can sound complex, but actually the protocols that help 90% of people, as you know very well, are simple. They're the six foundation principles. And where there are imbalances there, that leads to reduced energy, reduced function, increased need for stimulants, medications, which take you away from your natural awareness. So the more we get back to our natural state, the more we look after ourselves, the more we nourish ourselves and care for ourselves, being in that feminine state, you know, I know that if I'm wanting to work hard, if I'm wanting to achieve big things, I need to make sure that my diet is good, that my sleep is good, that I'm well hydrated, that I'm resting, that I'm looking after my needs for movement, that I'm focusing on things that help me to think good thoughts. All of those factors are a massive benefit to allow us to have more energy within ourselves, which then allows us to create more change. But we have to focus on ourselves first. Otherwise, we just become a martyr and we burn ourselves out for the sake of somebody else. And we probably all know people who have been in that state where they've ignored their own needs for the sake of somebody else, and it doesn't tend to end very well. So that would be my advice to anybody who wants to affect change. Start off by being in a more natural state to how you're developed as a species, as a human being, as an individual, and nourishing oneself. And then from there, the possibilities are huge. But you can't do it from a place where you're exhausted and fatigued and ill. So that's one of the techniques I use with mothers a lot. A, getting mothers to understand that a child is understanding how to love itself by watching how its mother loves itself or herself. And then B, understanding that that's being imprinted upon the psyche, and that's how the child will act for the rest of its life. That makes it much easier for a mother who's part of the mother archetype is to give of her own energy, to sacrifice herself. Well, an overexpression of the mother archetype is to sacrifice oneself beyond a healthy level, which then ironically leads to the child who you're trying to nourish yourself, who you're trying to nourish, actually learning to disregard their own needs and also to be guilty about the damage it's caused to the mother in the same time. So I use that principle with mothers a lot, and it does help. So
that's powerful, mate. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And it's going to cause us to move into the feminine and then move into a greater state of balance.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's amazing, mate. Thank you. And so I've got my final question, which is, Phoenix Vision is dedicated to creating a transformative vision of health for its listeners. So my question is, what does transformation mean to you, and what would you like to transform in the future?
Good question. I think transformation, I think valuable transformation for so many of us is to return to our intuitive internal wisdom. And again, this goes back to the last slightly rambling answer I gave. So I'll try not to go over that again. But it's almost the more stress there is upon our bodies, the less we can actually hear our own intuition, hear our own wisdom, hear our own body talking to us. I always use the example of all the keys on a keyboard or a piano being banged at once. You can't hear the tune. But when you start taking away the stress notes, then you can hear the symphony being played more effectively. And that's when you can start to hear when one note is incorrect. Okay, well, that instrument there or that string is slightly out of tune. That's where I need to focus. It's just that it's that refining way. So transformation, I think, for where we are as a species is transforming back to A, understanding that we are nature, transforming that belief system that we are separated from nature, that we are thrown out of the Garden of Eden, if you believe in that aspect of religion. You know, we ate from the tree of knowledge and we were cast out from the Garden of Eden. There's the separation. Then subsequently, our medical approaches for very long treated the human body as separate from nature, wanted to kill believed all bacteria was bad, all viruses are bad, all this, you know, everything apparently external to the human is a threat. When actually we find that within the human body is nature, and that's what keeps us healthy. So I think for me, the transformation is transforming us back into a species that understands what it is to be connected to ourselves and to be connected to nature. Because once that is achieved, then we're in a state where the potential is endless. That gives us that more intuitive, innate wisdom that allows us to focus more on things that are really meaningful. And there was a second part to that question, which I've now forgotten. So please, can you remind me what that is?
Sure. What would you like to see transform in the future?
I genuinely believe if we learn to accept ourselves as part of nature, as a valuable part of nature. This is something I thank Zach Bush, who I listen to a lot of his stuff, for teaching me. We have five senses. All of them can experience beauty. And if we understand that nature and evolution is purposeful. It's not random. You know, I've spent years reading about epigenetics, about evolution, about all these aspects, and the more I learn, the more I understand that everything is purposeful. So if everything is purposeful, then I am purposeful, then every person is purposeful, part of nature. And if we learn to understand and accept that, then we do not need to go chasing X, Y, Z. We do not need to go abstracting. We do not need to go taking from another, because we are already enough. We are already part of one of nature's children. We are already that. We already have the five senses to experience beauty on the planet and in the universe, which we are the only species that has that capacity. You've never seen a rabbit watching the sunset or any other species noticing the beauty, which we have the capacity to do. And that in itself is so purposeful. So using those five senses and an understanding of that we are part of nature and that we are enough just by existing, I think that allows you to take a deep breath and go, okay, I don't need to go chasing all this stuff. I'm good the way I am. I'm perfect the way I am. Okay, now, what is it me as a valuable individual within a collective environment, a collaborative environment, what then is really meaningful to me? And when as we talk about the amount of energy that we both have following a life that we could probably earn more money working in a financial setting, but we choose something different because it's more meaningful to us. That is then allowing us to vibrate at a level that is very beneficial. I think if more of us were doing that, more of us were connecting to ourselves, connecting to our understanding that we are nature, connecting to our five senses and using those five senses to really live life to our fullest, then I think the symptom of that will be a far more heart-centered society and a heart-centered species, which will then make choices and create things that's far more nurturing. And I think that goes back to what you're saying about the Mayans talking about this is the unfurling of the feminine wing. And that's in a broad perspective, the change that I would like to see. And then there's all different manifestations of that. All different manifestations, and that's down to the individual to discover what's the most meaningful to them. And as we talked about, you and I are both, we feel like we're operating from our heart. We feel love when we're going about doing what we're doing, and the amount of energy that creates for us and the amount of fulfillment that creates for us is high. And that's if we love ourselves and understand that we are part of nature, then that's a great way to thank nature and thank the fact that we're here.
Beautiful, beautiful brother. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. It's lovely. It's lovely to express those kind of, I love talking about this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got beautiful articulations, mate. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
Oh, this has been a great, great time spent together. I really appreciate your time, mate. Before we wrap up, how can people find out more about you if they're interested in working with you? Or anything else that you might have going on?
So I'm on Instagram. Mark Zawadzki is my handle. That's probably the best way to see the work I do. I'm dragging myself into doing more social media because it's, I'm not the most shout it from the rooftops kind of person, but I realize that I can, if I don't shout it from the rooftops more often and louder, then I can't help as many people. So I'm having to slightly change the way I focus upon myself, and realizing that things like social media are allowing me to create more understanding of what I do to help more people. And that's, again, if I can have the best process in the world, but if nobody knows about it, it's not very useful. So that's probably the best way to get in touch and reach out and see what I do.
Fantastic. Oh, Mark, thank you so much for your time, brother. This has been a really great expose and really great to spend some time in this setting. You know, it's a really unique thing to be able to jump on with an inspiring person and just talk about some really interesting topic for
It's irrelevant. It's such a relevant topic in so many ways. I mean, it's almost when you ask me the questions, I'm there's so many avenues to go down. There's so many relevant avenues to so many people. It's difficult to know which one to which direction to go. That's why I usually take it back to the people I work mostly with. And again, if you're helping people to create, look at somebody like a Haaland, you know, the footballer. One of the most famous people on the planet probably now. His process is very much understanding about listening to his body in a deeper way. Meditation, connection, nurturing himself, and look what creates. And I think again, that's something that I is very meaningful for me, is teaching people how to nurture themselves. It allows them to be more centered, it allows them to be operating from a better state, whatever field they're in, whether it be athletics or anything else. So it's nice to create that.
Thank you, brother. So what comes up is one unified heart of humanity. We're all the same, but also different.
Exactly. And our apparent separation gives us the opportunity to see the beauty in another. Mm-hmm. Without the five senses, I can't see the beauty in you, because I've just purely be connected with you. Mm-hmm. That's possibly why we're here as well. Mm-hmm. To have a moment where our souls can have an embodied experience that allows us to taste chocolate, to see the beauty in another, to caress the skin of a loved one. That's pretty much enough, isn't it?
Yes, mate. So, brother, I'll end the podcast with how it started. With love.
Lots of love.
Lots of love, brother. Thank you so much.
Lovely to spend time with you.